Yom HaZikaron, Rabbi Chaim Bravender, comparing the teachings of the Satmar Rav and Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik.
There are two well-known positions about the state of Israel in general and about our attitude to soldiers in particular. And I'd like to mention both of them because I think the perspective is important. The first is the position of the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav, as you know, was not able to deal or to absorb or to integrate into his worldview the idea that Eretz Yisrael, right, was being resettled and reestablished by people who were not devoted to the Torah. In fact, amongst them were people who were obviously and intentionally opposed to the Torah. Now, I'm not interested at this time in the life history of the Satmar Rav and what might have contributed to this position. I'm only interested in the fact that the Satmar Rav was a great Torah scholar and was devoted to Torah and to its scholarship, and especially to the people who saw him as their Rebbe. In this context, this wide context, which is called, you know, Eretz Yisrael or Medinat Yisrael, within this context, the Satmar Rav spoke particularly about soldiers, in the idea of having an army. And in his opinion, since every army, every war that is fought, ends up with some people, Rahmana Litzlan, being killed, as we see today. I mean, it's impossible to fight a war in which you sanitize your army against any kind of danger or damage. The Satmar Rav said, clearly, setting up the state of Israel demands having an army. An army, in turn, demands that sometimes it's going to be used, and sometimes you go to battle. And there is no heter, he felt, for putting people in a situation where they endanger their own lives for the good of something which he could not find a serious rationale for. So it was kind of compounded problem. The army, for him, compounded the problem instead of alleviating it. He says not only were the people who lived here in Eretz Yisrael and the people who were trying to institute this state, right, this kind of dominion of the Jewish people, not interested in the Torah and not interested in furthering the Torah, something which was perhaps true at that time. I think it's less true today on the national level, but that's not the point that I'm trying to make. It was true, therefore, it was clear to him that the state would then have to form an army would have to fight battles, people would be sent to their deaths, and this was a kind of unacceptable pikuach nefesh situation. It was unacceptable that you would band together in order to create a situation which could only lead to the death of people. What happens in the diaspora? A plenty of Jews are killed in the diaspora, but no one sends them. I mean, in history. I don't mean today or yesterday, but in history, plenty of Jews have been killed, but no one sent them to their death. It wasn't Jews who organized the pogroms. It wasn't Jews who organized whatever difficulties the Jews had in different places in the diaspora. But here, in Eretz Yisrael, it would turn out that the Jews themselves, are organizing the death of other Jews for a value which has no significance in his eyes. And this is the position of the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav described this position in a series of books, right? The most famous of them is called Vayoel Moshe, a tremendous collection of sources in which he tries to defend his general outlook. The Satmarov was not the only person who wrote about this problem, the problem of the state of Israel. There was another great Hungarian Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva, for a time in Pressburg and elsewhere, whose name was Teichtal, who wrote a book called Eim Habanim Smecha, in which he discusses his own personal revelation. Right, for him, it was a revelation because his education was not that kind of an education, where he sees that the state of Israel, or moving in the direction of Eretz Israel and the state of Israel, makes sense from the Torah point of view. So you had two great Hungarian Talmudists, scholars, leaders, people of great significance. Rav Teichtal was killed during World War II. The Satmarov, if you know the story, managed to escape and came to Eretz Israel for a while, then moved to New York, where he rebuilt literally a tremendous empire. Right? There's a Satmar is an empire. It also is Hasidic, but it's more of an empire than it is anything else today. So that it's certainly not true. It's not true that the Satmarov, though he was an extraordinary scholar, was the possessor of the only position that came out of those kinds of schools, right? The Satmarov and Teichtal did not come from the same place in Hungary, but they were both Hungarians. Rabbi Soloveitchik also addressed this question. And Rabbi Soloveitchik came up with an interesting idea, which I think is important for us to at least mull over and to consider. Rav Soloveitchik made these comments, I think, around in the early 60s. Right? Many years have passed since he made his comments. And we might be able to, if not to argue about them or to have independent opinions, but we might be able to think about whether the implications of what Rabbi Soloveitchik said were true or not. Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke about this in two places. One place in what's called the drushos. In English, it's called the Rav Speaks. The Rav, almost as an aside, it seems, asked about an Israeli. Somebody asked him about an Israeli flag, or someone had asked him about it. Like, what do you think about it? If people would ask the Rav questions like that. At odd times. So I must have asked him, what about the Israeli flag? What about the Israeli flag? So he says, first of all, he said, I do not hold at all with the magical attraction of a flag or of similar symbolic ceremonies. Judaism negates ritual connected with physical things. Okay, I mean, that's what he said at the time. I'm sure someone would be able to explain it. But the Rav said, if I was driving around in Eretz Yisrael today, I probably wouldn't put a flag on my car. Because it doesn't, the Rav, I'm trying to interpret what the Rav said, and this is speculative and argumentative, but probably interesting nevertheless. I think the Rav would probably say, it's not for me. I'm not going to put a flag on my car. Personally, I sympathize with that position. In spite of the fact that some people might say that I don't put a flag on my car because of the neighborhood that I live in, nevertheless, even if there is a certain amount of truth to that, it's not the kind of thing I'm drawn to. You know, it's not a kind of, I mean, I can see doing it lahachis, but I can't see doing it for any positive reason. But look, everybody, maybe when I grew up, I remember the 4th of July. The American flags were usually flown very seriously by Americans of Italian descent. That was in my where I lived. But Americans of Jewish descent were not so into it. for some reason. So maybe that's had an effect on me as well. Nevertheless, he says, nevertheless, the Rav says, here, in this drasha, he says that there is a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, that even though bikvura, when you bury a person, the halacha is that burial is generally democratic. Everybody wears the same clothing. You know, the shrouds, even though in Yerushalayim they're a higher price than lower price shrouds, but really, everybody wears white, simple kind of covering. Every dead body is buried in that way. So there's a certain democracy in that. However, at the end of the Shacharit, at the end of Yeridea, there's a halacha, which is that if a person is killed by a non-Jew, he's buried in his bloody clothes. Even though, you know, generally burial is done, the kavod ames of burial is to wash the body and to clean it and then to get rid of all the blood. That's called tahara. Before burial, we do tahara. Nevertheless, the halacha is that someone who was killed by non-Jews is buried in the clothes he was wearing when he was killed, so that his blood, the blood on the clothes, should be seen, and it should become avenged, so that somehow the person who was killed as a Jew, becomes representational of the struggle that may exist between Jews and non-Jews at that time. And he himself becomes a flag representing that struggle. Even though the obvious halacha is that you should be buried in one way, in such a case, the Rav said, there is a change. And then he said as follows, something which, I'll read to you what he said, but then I'll explain it based on something he said elsewhere. How much more is this so of the blue and white flag, which has been immersed in the blood of thousands of young Jews who fell in the War of Independence, defending the country and the population? It has a spark of sanctity that flows from devotion and self-sacrifice. We are all enjoined to honor that flag and treat it with respect. Now, in other words, the Rav promulgated a theory, which I would translate as follows. And that is that when a person, it doesn't matter so much now any longer what this person, how this person deported himself in his own personal life, how he lived, how he acted, what he said, what he wrote, and what he did. When he is put on the front line for Am Yisrael, on the front line for Am Yisrael, then somehow his position changes by wearing the uniform. If I would say it in our language, by wearing the uniform of Tzahal, by going out to the front lines, he is not who he is particularistically, right? Even though I know him, I know what he thinks, I know what he says, I know what he does, and I'm not happy about any of those things. Nevertheless, a person can objectively or arbitrarily assume a position where he is representational. When the enemy is not killing a person or trying to kill a person with an idea, he's trying to kill a Jew, someone who represents the history of that tradition. And so the Rav said, well, that's different. That's different. That he could understand. Because even though he wouldn't put a flag on his car, if he was driving around in Eretz Yisrael, he can understand that the flag can be turned into a symbol that is meaningful, just as a person who is killed by a non-Jew can be a meaningful person. We put these two things together, we say somebody who was a chayal, someone who was a soldier, and killed as a soldier, for whatever reason, right, that person is a flag. He becomes a symbol. And irrespective of what he thought, what he wrote, and even what he did, at that moment all that didn't exist. That may be like a pshat in a uniform. A uniform is like to say, I'm not I. I am the Jewish people. I am everybody. We're all doing this together. But the Satmar Rav said, that the idea of Eretz Yisrael is not a worthy idea. In other words, if you didn't have Eretz Yisrael, you wouldn't have to have an army. If you wouldn't have to have an army, you wouldn't have to come on to the Shtikel Torah of Rav Soloveitchik. You wouldn't have to say anything about a flag. In other words, we haven't completely solved the problem. So I'll just tell you what the Rav said elsewhere. The Rav said as follows. He said, the Jewish people, said about Eretz Yisrael, right? He said about Eretz Yisrael. The Jewish people after World War II, everybody understands, are in, I don't mean it as a pun, in dire straits. Our situation was very, very bad. Who would have thought, after World War II, I mean, who were thinking about such things, that 50 or 60 years later, the situation would be worse. Worse because, even though there are more and more people studying Torah, and there are more poor people writing about Torah, and there are more poor people who can afford to do all of those things and to live in a reasonable and a respectable way, the number or the percentages of Jews that seem to be abandoning ship, leaving the nation, leaving the population of the Jews and going off to wherever they go to assimilation, seems to be increasing steadily. There doesn't seem to be anything, any kind of panacea that exists within the world of education or explanation or interpretation or speaking about it and being enthusiastic about it. The Jews continue to kind of find it difficult to stay within the fold. Rabbi Soloveitchik was of the opinion, that one of the things that slows down this state of depreciation, one of the things that would prevent the absolute destruction of Am Yisrael is the state of Israel. That the state of Israel, provides a kind of a focal point of which the Jews can look upon and say, that's us. That's also us. We're not just the Jews of the Holocaust. I'm not speaking now about whether theology demands that we make a connection between Holocaust and the state of Israel. I'm not speaking about that. I'm just saying that a Jew who grows up in Kansas can be proud of the fact that the Jews have made Eretz Yisrael into a going concern. And it's probably true that the rate of assimilation in the world, anybody who's been anywhere in the world outside of Borough Park in Muncie, knows that pride in Eretz Yisrael is an integral part of Jewishness. I am a Jew, and I'm with Eretz Yisrael. Right? It means different things with different people, surely, but it's there. It's there for each and every one of us. And so Rabbi Soloveitchik was of the opinion that the existence of the state of Israel was tangibly important. I'm not talking about psukim or analysis or theology or machshava. I'm not talking about the Eretz Yisrael up in the sky, right? Or Eretz Yisrael that we think and we dream about. But he said, you could see it. You could see, where would we be without Eretz Yisrael? If life in the diaspora becomes so difficult that so many people are willing or able to assimilate, where would we be without the pride in Eretz Yisrael? So that the difference, I think, between the Satmar Rav and Rabbi Soloveitchik in a kind of, on a level of ideas, was that for whatever reason, the Satmar Rav thought that the future of the Jewish people would be built with those people who were willing to accept the entire system. Two of them, four of them, eight of them, they and their children would be the future. Whereas Rabbi Soloveitchik thought that the future also belonged to all of the people who called themselves Jews for whatever reason, and all of the people who found pride in Eretz Yisrael. And those people then would form the kernel of the future, and they would educate their children better and better, and they would somehow find a way to deal with the ravages of assimilation. So that Eretz Yisrael, according to this position that was enunciated by Rabbi Soloveitchik, was not something that was an option. It wasn't like a new neighborhood. You know, the Jews have moved to North Miami Beach. But it wasn't that at all. It was rather that the critical, the linchpin of the fight against, for Jewish survival, turned out to hinge upon Eretz Yisrael. And if that's the case, pikuach nefesh for survival, pikuach nefesh for national survival is certainly understandable. Whether it's technically a melechus mitzvah or not is not something that I have to get into now. But survival of Eretz Yisrael became almost identified, as Rabbi Soloveitchik said, with the survival of the Jewish people. So the position, and I think it's important to sort of try to understand the two positions, but the position that seems to me to have vindicated itself over time, even though in history this is a very short period of time, is that Eretz Yisrael, life in Eretz Yisrael, the existence of Eretz Yisrael is significant, is important, is necessary for the continued Jewish survival of all the Jews, wherever they are. Right? That's the first thing. And secondly, that any war that's fought for the survival of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is therefore necessary. It's pikuach nefesh for Klal Yisrael. And therefore, everybody who fights in such a war, anybody who fights in such a war is certainly in the category, as the Rav said, of the talis, right? The clothes of the person who was killed by the non-Jew. And that the symbol of the flag, the idea that there is a state in Israel, has to be defended and protected because it is really the last line of defense for the Jewish people. And since it's the last line of defense for the Jewish people, the people who are on that line and who are actively defending the Jewish people are in broad halachic categories, acting out of a sense of pikuach nefesh, and certainly can be respected because they fall within that very, very important category of people who are moser nefesh for Klal Yisrael.